Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Diving right back into it here on 96.5 The Fan, Bob Fesco, Dusty Likens, and Mac Murray. That's the money. The MVP chatter always starts to kind of rise up after week 10. Obviously, you've gotten past the halfway point. Guys have kind of shown who they really are. I would say you're top three front runners for the MVP candidacy this year, guys. I'd say Josh Allen. A little bit of a gap.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would say Jared Goff. And then I would say there's a tie between Jalen Hurts and Justin Herbert.
Jalen Hurts has to be considered in the conversation, but I think it's a unanimous selection with Josh Allen at this point in time. I don't think anybody should get a vote for MVP other than Josh Allen. He has been that good. I mean, we're watching Josh Allen, you know, play to that level that we saw Patrick Mahomes play when he won his first MVP, where they were winning games because of him. And they're sitting at 8-2 right now because of Josh Allen, because, you know, they changed his entire weaponry, right? He's got guys out. And the way that he finished off that game against the Chiefs and willed that team to a victory, again, this is a regular season award. Nobody's playing better right now and is more valuable to their team than what Josh Allen is doing up in Buffalo. So I think right now, to me, I think it's a unanimous selection. It's Josh Allen, and everybody else is waiting for second place votes. I could be totally wrong about that, but I think that's to the level that he's playing right now.
I think Jared Goff's in the discussion as well. But again, I understand, like, somebody would say, like, well, he had the 5-interception game.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like,
they're also 9-1, you know?
Correct. And he's got the number one offense in the league, and this is an offensive award that
right.
goes to quarterbacks. Like, according to NFL on Prime Video, their locker room of MVP candidates is Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Jared Goff, Jalen Hurts, Patrick Mahomes, Kyler Murray, and Justin Herbert.
Right. And then they have another category. And I don't think they left anybody out of that conversation, right?
I mean, like, I would always that's seven candidates.
Yeah. I would always love for there to be a defensive player, you know,
nice.
Included, but nobody's done that since 86 when Lawrence Taylor won it. And
JJ Watt could have.
You could have won it. TJ Watt could be a potential guy
but they have to have like ungodly numbers.
But what would it take for TJ Watt to get the MVP? Because Pittsburgh is not winning games because of their offense,
he
right?
He would have to set the single sack record in a season.
Would he?
Which is Strahan?
Well, no. Who passed? Somebody pass Strahan?
No.
Strahan still has it?
Still has it.
Houston got close.
Down for him.
Justin got close.
Yeah.
But I would say either close to the sack record / like if he had like 18 sacks and like 3 pick sixes or something. Pick
yeah.
sixes are going to help.
Pick six would be huge.
Yeah.
Like, he has to be something so far superior
yeah.
to everybody else.
Yeah.
But if Pittsburgh ends up winning this division, which I think they're going to about now, right? And let's say Pittsburgh becomes the 2 seed. They're not the 2 seed because of Russell Wilson. They're not the 2 seed because of Justin Fields or Mike Williams or anything like that. They would probably be the 2 seed because of that defense of TJ Watt. Like, I think he kind of needs to be in that conversation. And then their kicker, of course, should probably be in the conversation, because that's the only way they score points. Is that?
Do you see Mike Tomlin's tired of seeing him win player?
Yeah,
I'm tired of Boz, man.
I know, right? But I mean, like, TJ Watt is absolutely legit and could be in that conversation. But we don't want to give it to a defensive player.
I mean, like I said, it has to be like an anomaly of a year. Like Max said, you have to have like 20 sacks and then have like 4 forced fumbles, 3, you know, scoop and score / pick interception for touchdown type of thing.
Yeah.
Mahomes is in there, I think, because one, you can never leave him out.
Right.
And if he goes weeks 12 through 17 or 18, whatever the hell it is.
Yeah, we're going into week 12 now, yeah, right?
If he goes the next 6 weeks of the season and has those Mahomes games, mm-hmm. like he started his career with, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it's Mahomes.
Right.
So, like, let's say they don't lose again the rest of the season, and all of a sudden he starts being the Patrick Mahomes everybody is pining to see, you would have a discussion because your team would win your division, which is always a key.
Right.
Like Alex Gold was saying that yesterday, there's no way Burrow could win MVP because he's just not going to win his division. He's not going to be a winning team.
He's an under 500 quarterback right now.
So that's a big key. So Mahomes would have the division on his hand, the record on his hand, and the numbers that would start to come and produce, because we can have an argument to say this has been Patrick Mahomes' worst season he's ever had, at least so far.
Sure.
He's got a 69% completion percentage. That's on pace to be the best he's had all season, which is interesting. He's thrown for 2,400 yards, so I'd say he's going to throw just north of 4,000. 15 touchdowns and 11 interceptions. And that is tied for the NFL lead
right.
with the 11 interceptions.
And I don't think that's going to last. I know people want to make a big deal out of that. Ooh, Patrick Mahomes sure. leads the league in interceptions. I would imagine by the time we're all said and done and this season's over, Patrick Mahomes is not leading the league in interceptions. But if he is and they're 15-1, who the hell cares, right? Like, right. It, to me, that is irrelevant. If they go 16-1 and win the division and they're the one seed and he leads the league in interceptions, so he bucked another trend, right? Like, that's what Patrick Mahomes has kind of made his whole career on, is bucking all of these trends and whatnot. But I think you're right. I mean, this is a conversation we're having now on the 19th of November, and we can revise it next week. I mean, if Mahomes goes out there on Sunday and is, 22-25 for 350 yards and three touchdowns, people are going to be saying, okay, Patrick Mahomes is back. Maybe he's back in that MVP conversation. And if they win out and he averages about 300 yards per game and a couple of touchdowns per game, then he absolutely is going to be in that conversation. Mm-hmm. This is why this conversation is fun, because it literally does change every single week based on what we're watching in the NFL. I don't think there's a wrong answer right now for who could be MVP or who could be MVP at the end of the year. It may drastically change from where we sit,
And the text line says Saquon Barkley should replace Jalen Hurts. Look, here's the thing, and I can explain this to you. This is always going to go to a quarterback. Where Saquon Barkley's going to win an award is Saquon Barkley might have offensive player of the year already wrapped up.
Right.
When he did that hurdle and then he went off for two touchdowns to close the game last week for Philadelphia, plus what their record is, Saquon Barkley's not going to win MVP. Saquon Barkley's going to win offensive player of the year.
Correct.
Him or Ja'Marr Chase.
Right.
Or Derrick Henry, yeah.
Yeah, those are the three for that.
Derrick Henry's fading, in my opinion, because the team is fading right now. Six weeks ago.
They can't run the ball when they're behind.
Right, exactly.
It's funny.
Well, they feel like they can't.
It's funny when
They don't.
Yeah.
They go down by a touchdown in the second half. They go away from Derrick Henry and they feed force feed Zay Flowers.
It's amazing how quickly they get out of sorts.
It's because of their quarterback, and that's what I'm about to explain. And you brought this up. Lamar Jackson versus the Steelers and Chiefs is 3-9.
Yeah.
Versus the rest of the NFL, he's 65-18. Versus the Bills, he's 3-1. Versus Cincinnati, he's 10-2. Quick math, he's 13-3 versus those other two teams. But they don't win the division every year.
Right.
They're not a team in the hunt. Lamar is rough in big games. Like, he's just rough in big games. Against the Steelers, 2-5. He hasn't beaten the Steelers in the last four times, and he's won once in the last five.
Yeah.
He's not beating the team he needs to beat. Versus the Chiefs, we just gave you the numbers, 3-9, so it's not much better. 2-5, 1-4
or 1-5 against the Chiefs? I saw both yesterday.
He's 1-, I don't know what it is against the Chiefs. But
I thought it was 1-4. I'll go look it up.
Yeah.
He might be 1-4, yeah. 2-5, this is the Steelers anyways. Yeah. It's nothing the Chiefs. But when you look at like what he does in games that are the Denver Broncos, I'm not saying that the Denver Broncos are a premier team or a bad team. 1-4 versus the Chiefs.
1-4 versus the Chiefs.
1-4 versus the Chiefs.
I thought this was the fifth loss, but
the only one he has is that go for it on fourth down.
Right. Where he circled into the end zone and jumped into the end zone and did a somersault. So
but the thing I'm finding myself hard to have is the conversation of why we have this with Dak Prescott, we don't have it with Lamar Jackson. I understand the MVP awards are there, but for not beating Kansas City and not beating the Pittsburgh Steelers and you're the most valuable player, I get it. He's an absolute freak of an athlete. I love watching him play, but the conversation to be had about Lamar Jackson is serious. Because right. if we do this with every other quarterback, and some we don't even give a chance, a la Caleb Williams, mm-hmm. Lamar Jackson in that game froze up. And when the game gets big, that's why I'm interested on Monday night. When they play the Chargers, who's a good defense, whose quarterback does not turn the ball over, hadn't thrown an interception in 8 games.
Right.
Like, they have a running game in J.K. Dobbins. And you better believe J.K. Dobbins is hungry to play the Ravens. That game is one of those games where it's like, all right, Lamar, if you are who you think you are, what a lot of people say you are, this is one of those games where you need to see it. And if not, we can continue to carry this narrative. And that's fine. No one's hating on him. No one's saying it's just when he plays in big games, he freezes up. The AFC Championship game, he was not good. That game against Pittsburgh, he was not good. What's the coincidence? Chiefs, Steelers, division rival, AFC rival.
And great head coaches going against him that have him figured out, if you want to say it that way. Andy Reid and Mike Tomlin, right? They're two of the best, if not the two best in the business at what they do. To take it one step further, Lamar against everybody but the Steelers has a 74.4% winning percentage. That's great. But when the games matter most, where is Lamar Jackson? And it hurts me to say it because I'm such a big fan of Lamar. It's hard to look at those warts in players that you love and teams that you love. But sometimes you have to be objective. And the objective thing right now with Lamar Jackson is he's good at beating Calvary. But when he has to play a team that's good and a team that's legit, Lamar Jackson doesn't get the wins. And now I know football is a team sport and all this nonsense, but everything is put on the quarterbacks. Everything is put. Can you win the big one? Can you win the big one? Can you win the big one? And the answer for Lamar right now is no, he can't win the big one. And so that's why I can't put him in that MVP category right now. He's winning games, sure, but he's not beating the teams that he needs to beat to take his team to the next level. You can only beat Calvary by 100 so many nights.
Bob Fesco, Dusty Lycan, and Smack Morey. Coming up on the other side, Danny Hughes. He'll join us here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your new home for K-State athletics, 96.5 The Fan.
Diving right back in here on 96.5 The Fan. You talk about a savage flex. I just had to be going down like a rabbit hole on Twitter.
Yeah.
And you had mentioned that UMKC won 119-19.
Yeah, 119-19, they beat Calvary last night. They legitimately won by 100 points.
You missed this one. UMKC had tweeted out at halftime, a buzzer-beating three by the Warriors cuts the lead to 55. Rue up, declare KC. Halftime score, 64-9.
God. It is fantastic.
Twist the knife, yeah, I guess.
I guess, man.
I thought the White Sox had a good social media team this year, too.
Yeah, they did.
We lost again. Darn. Somebody for the Dallas Cowboys needs to have a good social media team.
Did you see the Houston Texans post last night after they won?
Yes.
How good is this one, right? Good. It's a picture of that metal falling out of the stadium, and it says, look out below, and the L is capitalized and below. Everything else is small. Like, you want to talk about a good troll job. That was it by their social media team last night. But shout out UMKC, their assistant coach, Jake Cates, leading the way with a 100-point victory over something called Calvary. Somebody said, that's around here. I have no idea where that is. They had a lot of clicks on their website today. Yes. I bet they are.
Oh, yeah.
Who's this?
Never heard of it.
Our web traffic is up. Well, you lost by 100.
Maybe their web traffic will start buffering like the Jake Paul, Mike Tyson fight.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody from the 417 asks, what's Mahomes' record versus the Bills? I believe 3-4, but 3-0 in the playoffs.
3-0 in the playoffs.
So if that was like a mention towards the Lamar Jackson stuff.
And he's 8 touchdowns, 0 picks in the playoffs versus the Bills.
Thank you.
Isn't that wild? You know, yeah. The best play the best when it matters the most, right?
Yeah. So 3-4 versus the Bills, but 3-0 in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care if Patrick Mahomes never beats Buffalo in the regular season. If he never loses to them in the postseason, I don't care.
If they win again this year in the postseason over Buffalo, who cares what they do in the regular season? That's why I listened to those comments from Von Miller, and I'm like, damn. Like, Von's been around long enough knowing not to, you know, throw a victory parade in week 11 of the regular season. But, boy, it sure sounded like he was throwing a victory parade up there in Buffalo. I like Josh Allen's. It's like, yeah, whatever. We won a regular season game. So what?
Well, here's a guy that's been there for 3 weeks.
It's the first time in a, like, long time that I've actually felt joy, you know, from winning this game, from
you know, just the way we played, from having so many guys on the team who, you know, are playmakers, and they come up and they show up when their number is called, you know, collectively as a group. It's just amazing. You know, a lot of the guys here, it's just kind of a different place to Buffalo compared to some of the other places I've been to. So a lot of the guys, it's a tight-knit group, I would say. A lot of the guys go out together. They hang around each other 24/7. And,
so a team.
And it truly shows up on the field. It truly does.
Yeah, team.
Man, right?
Like, yeah.
So a team?
Who was that, Amari Cooper?
It was.
Yeah, that didn't happen in Cleveland, right? You weren't hanging with Watson, were you?
No,
you
know? Or Dallas.
Or Oakland.
Like, yeah. Come on, man. Like, it's been rough for him.
The only loser organization that he hasn't been a part of is the Jets. I mean, you've been part of Cleveland, yes, exactly. Oakland, and Dallas. I mean, the Jets complete that foursome right there. That's your final four of turd bird loser organizations that you never want to be associated with.
No, I think Buffalo loved that win.
Yeah, they did.
Because when Allen says that, he winks at the reporter, says it means we got to 9 wins. That's the perfect answer. He's easy to hate and easy to like at the same time.
Yeah, he really is, right? Like, I think you're right really about that.
I mean, he had the little mishap in that, you know, AFC Championship game that one year where he started a fight, threw, like, a football in a guy's face and, like, got all pouty. And he's been known to be a flopper, which is, you know.
But who isn't in the NFL? You got to try to draw a flag.
Yeah, every other quarterback.
Yeah.
But I think that's why the Buffalo rivalry exists. I think that it's there, but it's also interesting how with a win, you speak about it for a couple of days, and then a loss, it's like, right, moving on.
Exactly.
On to Carolina. But it
sounds like they're enjoying this win, and you probably really enjoy it for 10 minutes or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. You know, you beat the Chiefs and whatnot. But just from some of the conversations and people that I've talked to around the league already this week, it's like the Chiefs are now back dialed in. Like it took that loss, like it does every year for this team, to kind of get knocked into the chin a little bit, to kind of reset everything, refocus. Because let's be honest, Dusty, you're 9-0. You're kind of on autopilot, right? And you're like, wow, we're blocking field goals to win games and all this kind of stuff. And then you get tussled by Buffalo a little bit. You lost by, you know, 2 scores to the Buffalo Bills. And so that kind of resets you. And I think it resets Patrick Mahomes a little bit too, because I think he's going to use that missed throw to Xavier Worthy to be kind of that jumping off point for getting better as a quarterback this year.
Yeah, autopilot's tough for me, because I do kind of think that they have that like block B playbook. Because they know that they're going to see that team again, because you believe in yourself. Obviously, you're 9-0. You're going to win only 2 games up on your division.
Right.
But should win your division, should be a contender for the number one seed, still control that narrative as well. And I think that when you're Andy Reid and you're Patrick Mahomes, you feel like you have an offense that you can say that this should beat most teams. If it doesn't, there's probably reasons why it didn't. But also, we're not going to show what really can beat teams, because if we're going to see them again, we don't want to put anything on tape.
Absolutely.
I totally get that. And we can ask our next guy, that Danan Hughes, who joins us now as he does every Tuesday at 7:25.
You hear him on game days in the booth.
Quickly, they get chunky and funky with stretching the field vertically.
And Thursday nights at 6 during Players Only.
Spitfire, hot fire take.
Here's Chiefs Radio Network color analyst Danan Hughes on your new home for Chiefs football, 96.5 The Fan.
That's right, Danan Hughes, every Tuesday at 7:25. It is brought to you by Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Kansas City. Discover the benefits of blue. Danan, to quote one Mike Tyson, everybody thinks they're a bad you-know-what till they get hit in the face. Maybe a little bit of a jab on Sunday night or Sunday afternoon to the Chiefs from the Bills?
Yeah, definitely was a jab. You know, you guys heard me say it was going to be a tough game. I didn't get into predictions because I feel like we know this Chiefs team. We know they're capable of anything, especially close games. And, you know, the way they played, it wasn't indicative of what we've seen up to this point. And that could be a good thing. I'm not saying that there's moral victories. There definitely isn't in the NFL, but there's always room for improvement. And sometimes it takes a loss. Think back to Christmas Day. You know, you go back to that game against the Raiders, and you realize that that was the optimum opportunity for a reset, for everybody to kind of come down and get refocused. And this Bills game could be that. Who knows? But, you know, it's not necessarily about the action all the time. Like I've told my kids, it's not necessarily about the action. Sometimes it's about the reaction and then what happens from it. So the actions sometimes can't be controlled, but your reactions can. So if it takes a loss right now in week 11 for us to kind of get reset and refocused and for the playmakers to recognize that, you know, everything is not going to, it doesn't just end well just for the sake of ending well. It's not always going to, you know, there's not going to be, you know, roses and sunshine at the end of the rainbow every single game. Like, Patrick is not going to pull some magic out. It's not going to be a Harrison Butker or a kicker that's going to come through in the clutch. It's not going to be a key fourth down stop in the red zone that allows us to escape with a win. And maybe that's what these guys needed. Who knows? We'll see how they're able to bounce back. The key thing to me is that now with the Bills behind us, outside of what maybe the Chargers and the Steelers will probably be at least significant favorites going forward. I would assume we'd still be a favorite against the Chargers regardless. But now you're in a situation where you can absorb all the not-so-good things from this game and figure out how to clean them up so that if and when you have to face the Bills again, you'll be ready.
Danan, I think when you look back at this Buffalo game, you mentioned the Raider game from a year ago. It seems like every year there's that moment that the Chiefs, I don't want to use the term shell-shock, but get kind of, as Dusty said, jabbed a little bit. And they have to kind of recalibrate things and refocus things like that. You played in this league before. You've been on good teams. Why does it take sometimes to get punched in the mouth to kind of listen to your coaches and do what they want you to do and refocus?
Well, heck, I think that's a way of life. It's not just sport.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we all got kids. We recognize that sometimes you can tell them till the cows come home what to do right and what decisions to make, and they have to touch the hot stove themselves and realize that it's going to burn them, and then realize from that what they need to change. So, like, we're in a great position. One, we're talking about one loss on the season as we go into week 12. When other teams are talking about a loss in week 11, that pretty much knocked them out of the playoffs. Or had them questioning coaching. You think about the Cincinnati Bengals and their stars questioning coaching, questioning game plans, et cetera. We're not in that position. So I don't want anybody to jump off the ship and feel like this Chiefs team is spiraling downward. But if we allow this loss to just go by as just a loss, then I think we're missing the boat as well. We're in a position where we can tighten some screws. You guys have heard me say it. I've said it on my show on Players Only. Like, it's a good thing to not have arrived by week 11, by week 12. Like, it's a good thing. As long as you're able to put yourself in a position that you don't have to have these wins. You don't have to have to go undefeated or to now have your backs against the wall like a lot of teams where they have to basically win out. You think about the Jets. You think about the Bengals. You think about several teams that literally have to win almost all or if not all of the rest of their games just to have an opportunity to play in January, and that's not going to be feasible. So they're talking about different things in their facilities, in their locker rooms than we are, and that's a good thing as well. So, like, I believe this team is capable of making history. That history is not going to be undefeated, obviously, but it definitely still can be a three-peat.
When you look at, because I want to bring this up because you obviously played the position, so I'm going to go to the well of the source. You watch that Mahomes throw to Worthy. What does Danan Hughes see on that play?
I can appreciate and respect Patrick saying that he should have got rid of the ball quicker, but that was a corner route from the slot. So it was going to the sideline anyway, and Xavier Worthy has to know where he is on the field. I mean, that was one of the top things Al Saunders used to teach us as wide receivers. We worked on the drill, the dragging the foot drill, every single day. Warm-ups, game, during 7-on-7, post-practice, catch, drag, catch, plant, drag, catch, plant, drag, regardless of where you were. And so I feel like it's a growing opportunity because guys, and this is one of the key factors, and it doesn't matter whether it's baseball, basketball, football, soccer, hockey, whatever. When you are an elite athlete and you've come up as an elite athlete at the high school level, at the college level, and you get to the pros, sometimes you have habits that you've been able to get away with. Like, it's never really presented itself as a problem just because you've been elite. And then you get amongst a whole bunch of other elite athletes, and you realize that there's some things about your game that you got to focus a little bit stronger on than you may have had to do in the past. And I feel like with a couple of the instances with Xavier, he's shown the speed, he's shown his ability to absorb the playbook. I mean, he's lining up in the backfield, he's running in motion, he's run the ball in, he's caught the slip passes, all of those different things, which is a lot to be put on a rookie's shoulders. So you know he's capable, but then there's aspects of the game as far as knowing exactly where you are on the field that he's got to tighten up and he's got to get better. And I think that challenge is something that will motivate him to get better and not necessarily go away sulking and feeling like less of an elite athlete or less of a playmaker than he really is. But the fact remains, as a wide receiver, you guys have heard me, I'm probably more critical of wide receivers than any other position because I played it. Mm-hmm. You always got to know where you are on the field. And I even said it, I think I said it during the broadcast, or maybe I said it after the game. In that circumstance, he knew that he was close to the sideline. And the reason why I know that he knew that is because he didn't try to run up the field. So it would have been a whole different thing that had he not gotten 2 feet in bounds because he was trying to run after the catch. Well, when he caught the ball, he went right out of bounds. So that he knew that he was close to the sideline. It just didn't trigger in him to drag that back foot. And that's something that the film doesn't lie. And I'm sure Connor Embry, the wide receivers coach, is going to be talking with them, and they're probably going to be working post-practice on those different techniques so that it gets drilled in him so it becomes second nature next time.
Dane, isn't that kind of when an athlete takes it, though, to that next level in the pros, when they finally realize that everybody else is as good or maybe better than them and they have to find a way to improve themselves? Like, I always go back to Mike Moustakas with this. It wasn't until he realized, oh, okay, this is what I have to do and everybody's just as good as me, I can't try to rip it through, you know, five people on one side of the infield. Sure. That's when you take that next step. Like, how long does that normally take for most guys to click where they realize, I got to do things differently now because the talent level is as good or if not better than me than I've ever seen before?
You hit the nail on the head. That's 100% correct. And
thank you.
And I coach youth baseball. I coach youth sports. And I always told kids, I told parents, the toughest kids to coach were the most talented. They were always the most talented. They were tougher. And a lot of people that watch the game think, oh, well, he's fortunate. He's got a couple of elite athletes, so he's got a few elite athletes. He doesn't have to do anything. No, those are the toughest ones. And the reason is the point that you made, because they've always been able to excel based on their athleticism. And then when you finally get to a point where they're meeting people who have the same athleticism, who have the same prowess, who have the same eliteness, now all of a sudden the coaching comes into play and the details come into play. And it takes each player is going to be different. It takes one player, it could be one moment in training camp where it's a reality check. Another guy, it could take a whole season. I mean, we've heard the stories about guys taking 2 and 3 years to get acclimated to the NFL. There are some cases where it took 1 year. I mean, look at Rashee Rice. It took half a season for him to get acclimated to the NFL and then excel. So who knows what it's going to do with Xavier, but I feel like these prominent situations, these eye-opening situations that everybody sees, not just he and the coaches during their meetings and dissecting film, but everyone gets to see it and experience it, and I feel like that's going to allow him to have maybe a humbling moment and then recognize, you know what, I'm a 4.21 and I'm the fastest one that came out of the combine and I'm one of the fastest ever to come out of college, but there's aspects of my game that go far beyond just being fast from Texas and being able to be a playmaker like he is. Like, the attention to detail is going to be key, especially at this level. So I'm amped about that part because I want to see, like, we're actually going to be able to see live and direct the maturation process of Xavier Worthy, and I think that's exciting.
No other team to get it done against than Carolina. Danon, as they move on, what do you want to see from this team against the Panthers?
The old saying, the old adage that I grew up in the NFL, beat the teams you're supposed to beat and win games at home. And that's pretty much the recipe for success for the rest of this season. A bunch of teams that we're supposed to beat, I'd like to see us beat them significantly. I feel like that's the boost that we could use from a confidence level, that it's not just winning the games, but in Carolina, you know, we should beat that team by more than one score.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go out and do that. Let's not make it a tight game and give them any hope, but at the same time, not get in the mindset that every game we're going to play is going to be a tight game. They shouldn't be. Look at the Detroit Lions. Look at several teams around the league that are winning games. Like, they figure out ways to win multiple score games. So let's go ahead and do that. And what better time to do it than the week before Thanksgiving on the road against a team that is definitely inferior.
All right. So you want to see an ass whooping this weekend down in Carolina. Did you see the ass whooping UMKC put on Calvary? They won by 100 last night. 119-19, UMKC won a men's basketball game.
Yeah, shout out to my boy Jake.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I gave Jake a shout out earlier. Yeah, Jake's doing a hell of a job down there, right?
Yes, I'm loving to see it. I can't wait to get to some UMKC games this year. Going to go out there with me and a few of the former Chiefs. The Chiefs are ambassadors, so go and support my guy out there. But there's a prime example as we segue from the Carolina Panthers. Beat the teams you're supposed to beat, and beat them significantly. So there you go. We can take a page out of the book of UMKC.
What's been the biggest ass whooping you've been a part of, one way or the other?
Oh man. In high school, I don't think in college, in the pros, it ever happened. But in high school, we played the number one team in the nation, Bobby Hurley, Danny Hurley, St. Anthony's High School in New Jersey, and they beat us by 50.
50? So,
yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
All right, man.
That's half a hundred.
They had those guys. They were number one team in the nation, and their sixth man, who didn't even start, was Terry DeHare.
Wound
up going on
to
be the all-time leading scorer in the Big East. So that just tells you how loaded they were.
Yeah, those St. Anthony teams.
The all-time Big East leader in scoring wasn't even a starter on that team.
I mean, those teams back in the day, Dan, and they were running, you know, roughshod over everybody they came in contact with. I'm glad to see you got beat by 50, but by them too. Good.
Yeah. That's the only time. That's the only time.
All right, Danon. Well, we'll talk to you again next week after a 56-7 victory over the Carolina Panthers.
Let's do it. I'm all for it.
There you go. Danon Hughes brought to you by Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Kansas City. Discover the benefit of blue. Bob's been speaking this into existence since about, what, July?
Maybe even before. Okay. Yeah.
We'll tell you what that is on the other side here on 96.5 The Fan. You're listening to Fesco and Dusty. It is your home for Kansas City sports.
Fesco and Dusty.
I can feel it all the way down in my plums.
On Kansas City's FM sports station, 96.5 The Fan.
Well, here we sit, folks. It is Tuesday, and that means it is time for the NBA. And the NBA is back, and FanDuel, America's number one sports book, wants you to catch all of the action. And right now, FanDuel is giving everyone 3 months of NBA League Pass. All you have to do to catch every tip-off and buzzer beater is place any $5 bet on the NBA to get 3 months of NBA League Pass courtesy of FanDuel. Just visit FanDuel.com/610Bob to make every moment more this season. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NBA and of 96.5 The Fan. 21 and present in Kansas. After 3-month free trial, the full price of League Pass will be automatically charged monthly. Cancel anytime. No refunds. Terms, restrictions, and embargoes apply. Limit one pass per customer. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas under an agreement with Kansas Star Casino, LLC. Gambling problem? Getting help is your best bet. Call 1-800-522-4700 or visit ksgamblinghelp.com.
Back here on Fesco and Dusty on 96.5 The Fan. Another beautiful day outside. Hopefully you stayed grounded last night as the shingles were making some noise at my house. That's the only thing making noise at my house last night.
The shingles? You got to call my friends over at Manning Roofing if that roof's coming off, my man.
Mm-hmm.
Get that roof looked at. They'll give you that storm damage assessment. It was windy last night.
That's right.
Maybe your roof came off. Maybe you got some roof damage. ManningGC.com. Get with them.
You brought up this. You want to go with the Royals guy or the guy that's not a Royal first when it comes to the trade deadline, or not the trade deadline, but trades in the offseason for baseball teams?
Let's go with the guy who's not a Royal that I thought could be a Royal, then saw the demands, and I'm like, yeah, probably not. Right?
One thing I always forget when it comes to the Royals and acquiring players is what Vern always tells me. He's like, look at who the agent is first, and then think about it. So we had the conversation once the season was over for the Royals about who they can go get to add a bat to the lineup or who makes the team better. And you'd set up the middles already, you know, center field, you got to figure out. And I thought the name Alex Bregman.
Yeah.
I was like, okay.
I'm interested.
Veteran, you know, played a good career, made a lot of money. And then Ken Rosenthal comes out and suspects that Alex Bregman and Scott Boras are aiming higher than most projections. And specifically at a deal closer to 11 years, $350 million deal, the same one that Manny Machado signed in February of 2023. Go ahead and close the book on that if that's what he's asking
for. Yeah, no kidding. He's 30 years old. That would take until he's 41.
Not happening.
GTFO, I think, is a saying that the kids use today, right? Yeah. That's what I would say to Bregman if he came in and said 11 for 350. GTFO. Have a nice holiday.
JJ doesn't even pick up the phone to call. It's like the guy that's got, you know, the 12-year vehicle out front, and he's like, 20 grand. You're like, what? Like, the thing has 115,000 miles on it. I'm not going to give you 20 grand for that. I'll give you like 9.
20.
Yeah, no. No. All right. Have a good day, sir.
But Boras has been failing lately. He's a failing agent, I would say, of late. Like, they're not getting the big deals. There are guys that are firing Scott Boras. I think Scott Boras is the worst thing to happen to baseball in our generation. I think he is the biggest hindrance to why baseball has kind of, I don't want to say kind of got knocked down a little bit, but Scott Boras just gets in the way. He gums things up, and I think he is a person that is really, really, really hindering the game of baseball more than anything. He's worse than steroids. He's worse than anything that we've seen in this game, because he takes a guy who's 30 years old and is peddling an 11-year contract. That's not good for the player. And that's not good for any teams out there.
But, you know, he makes a percentage off that
contract. Oh, I know he does. He gets his 3% off of that. So he wants the highest out there. But you're seeing guys fire Boras. You're seeing him not get the deals for the guys like he kind of promises them. And owners are like, all right, we're not doing this anymore. Just because you're Bregman and you had a nice career doesn't mean you deserve 11 years at 30.
Is Drew Rosenhaus the Scott Boras of the NFL, or is Drew okay?
I think Drew's okay. Drew gets deals done, man. Like, Drew doesn't mess around, right?
He got Tyreek out of jail.
He did. He got a nice deal for Tyreek Hill.
That morning.
Yeah. Like Rosenhaus, but that's where the NFL is so much different from baseball. You just go in and you get a deal done.
Right.
Baseball wants to sit around and scratch their balls for hours trying to figure out what we're going to do for a deal. Meanwhile, the NFL has signed everybody and their brother. The NBA signs everybody and their brother. And baseball's going, nah, we're thinking about 11 years for a 30-year-old. Yeah, GTFO, Scott, really.
The other name that you had been kind of on, and after hours, I kind of had a topic about this as well during the season, and that was when he was really thriving. So maybe I did it at a different time period than you had done it, but when he was thriving, Brady Singer, I was like, man, I feel like this is a guy you could move if you're the Kansas City Royals, because everybody needs a pitcher that can be that guy. And Brady Singer was rolling. he was, what, the third, fourth starter, however you want to look at it in the rotation. It was Reagans, Lugo, and then it was like, was it Walker, was it Singer?
Right.
And yes to the answer of that. And you think about it, and you're like, okay, well, if we have Walker back, you have Lugo, and you have Reagans, you got three guys. You could trade somebody. And the one thing that I always told people about trades is that trades don't always feel good in the moment. Like, you realize what you have, but then you realize what you lost. And I think Brady Singer is a hometown guy. I think people actually like him. But, you know, do you trust him to be what you thought he was going to be? And if you do, then he's worth the contract. But if you don't, then he's worth the negotiation to go to a team that's like, hey, we'll give you Singer, but we want a guy in return that maybe you're a little hesitant to give up as well. Because trades work when it's tough business to do. It's not like your, you know, childhood where it's like, oh, I'm going to trade so-and-so for so-and-so my video game and turn fair trades off.
This isn't Jonathan Sanchez for...
it's not Carlos Beltran for John Buck.
Right.
Right. It's Brady Singer, who could be a solid third guy, maybe a fourth guy in like a Dodgers rotation, because damn near went to the Dodgers 2 years ago. They were, the phone was hot with the teams involving that, but it is a guy that you could see parting ways from to add to your team where you have other holes.
I think they absolutely should trade Brady Singer. He's a player that can bring you a lot back in return too. And that's the thing. When you're making these trades, we're not trading player A who has no value to us and expecting to get value back in return. You have to trade value to get value. The rumor that's out there, whether it happens or not, is Jonathan India from the Reds, a second baseman. Royals need help at second base. They got Massey, but he's always got a back injury, and you can't really rely on that, and you need another bat in your lineup. India's got a good bat, and they played together at Florida, which is interesting too. But you've got to trade value in order to get value, and you got to trade from a surplus. And I think the Royals right now, shockingly, because we've never really said this, they've got a surplus at starting pitching right now. So you could part with Brady Singer, get Jonathan India to be your everyday second baseman. Now you got a shortstop second baseman combination that's pretty damn good, and you still have Michael Lorenzen that you can put in your rotation, right? Who was the cat last year? That Alec Marsh is another guy. I know ownership really likes Alec Marsh. That's a guy that you can have in your rotation. So I think Brady Singer is a viable trade candidate, and I thought, you know, since basically June, he kept going and going and going and doing his thing, pushing that trade value up, and that's good for the Kansas City Royals. I think they should look at their entire roster. I think everybody on this roster should be expendable, with the exception of Salvi and Bobby, and obviously the pitchers, Reagans and Walker, but I'm talking position players. They should all be expendable, because I think you can upgrade everywhere. Vinny would be another guy that I would look to trade this offseason, because I think his value is really high right now, and sometimes you have to capitalize on that value in order to make your team better. I don't want to hear we can't trade Vinny. The Chiefs traded Tyreek Hill and have been just fine since trading one of their best offensive weapons. Those are the trades that sometimes hurt, but at the end of the day make sense, because you got better as an organization. And so anybody who's kind of coming off that career year or played well last year, I would absolutely be floating their names out there to see what I could get back in return. A lot of teams don't have a guy like Brady Singer. A lot of teams do have a guy like Vinny Pasquantino, and would probably be a lot harder to trade. But both of those guys are coming off career years. The time is now to sell and make your organization better, as much as it hurts.
The problem I would have with getting rid of Vinny Pasquantino theory is that sometimes you have to value what the locker room is.
No doubt.
And that's something that can really jack up a locker room.
Yep.
Because it's him and Bobby's future. And I don't think Vinny's ever going to go anywhere. I really don't. Unless it just, the franchise were to just fumble and all of a sudden they're not good, which I don't find that easy to happen either. But
I'd trade MJ to the Yankees right now.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think he's a guy that's a glue in that locker room, though.
Right.
I think he's part of the group that came up through Omaha, and then all of a sudden everybody starts to kind of go their own route. But Vinny's a kind of guy that, like, when San Diego got rid of Eric Hosmer, that locker room fell apart.
It did. Yeah.
Via everyone on that team.
Right.
And it kind of caused a ripple effect amongst those players. They got back to it this year when they went and got, you know, Shildt and all those guys. That, I guess he was there last year, but like Hosmer many years ago, not many years ago, but a few years ago, but they rebuilt.
It's a lot longer ago than you think
right
now, yeah.
But it took them a little bit to rebuild that locker room, and they get all the way to the NLCS this year and obviously lose the inevitable Los Angeles Dodgers. But they had to rebuild that locker room. That locker room for the Kansas City Royals is Bobby Witt Jr., Vinny Pasquino, and Salvador Perez. Mm-hmm. That is something that you must keep. Now, with Tyreek Hill.
And I'm not saying you trade Vinny, but I absolutely think you need to explore everything. Like, he should not be. If somebody comes to you with a legit offer that you think can make your team better, you have to consider everything that's out there. The minute you don't, right, you're failing as an organization. But I think Vinny proved himself more valuable when he was hurt, you know, than when he played. Because we saw what happened with this team. When he got hurt, they kind of crumbled, you know?
Yeah, so he's a glue.
Yeah.
He's a thick glue,
right,
to that core in that locker room. Tyreek Hill, on the other hand, I think the team knew, and I think upper management knew, we can survive without this guy being around.
Right.
I think that's
what it
was. We have
Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah. And we have Travis Kelce, and we have Chris Jones. That's the sure hand fire circle of trust. I know Beasley talks about that. Carrington talks about it as well. The circle of trust with the Chiefs. Tyreek Hill was never in it.
No.
For obvious reasons. There were just things where it's like, hey, he's a loose cannon. I don't know what he's going to do. But like the circle of
May
trust.
Not be here
was,
on Sunday.
Right.
May get arrested before a game.
And so that's why I think with Tyreek Hill departing, I think that was easier. Whereas like a guy like Vinny Pasquantino, it's like, kind of need that guy to stick around. Plus, if this wasn't his best year and he can only get better from this or keep duplicating this and stay healthy, that's the other thing. He's got to stay
healthy. But it's interesting how you said Tyreek Hill, who will go down as arguably the greatest wide receiver in franchise history.
I thought you said Rashee Rice.
Well, not yet. But right now, Tyreek Hill is the greatest wide receiver in franchise history. It's easier to part with that guy than it is to part with Vinny Pasquantino, who's a guy on this team and is nowhere near the greatest at anything all-time Royals-wise, you know?
But
it's crazy, but he has the it. And yeah. But again, if somebody's willing to offer you something that you can't refuse, you got to go out there and explore all that. I don't think they will trade Vinny, but I do think Brady is a good possibility to get traded. And sure, I would be kind of upset if they didn't trade Brady Singer, because I think you can get better by spinning him off.
If there's smoke, there's fire. And there's smoke around Brady Singer's name and the Kansas City Royals trading. Coming up, there should be some fire on Sunday because Patrick Mahomes needs to go full Shaquille O'Neal. I'll explain what I mean by that on the other side here on Fesco and Dusty on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty.
What the hell's wrong with your station?
On Kansas City's FM sports station, 96.5 The Fan.
Well,
whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.